You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
Yes, sorry, we're live now anyway. And Jeff, just thank you there. We were just talking about how much we like to talk, me in particular, and how, yes, it's good for our mental health. It's good to talk.
Yes.
Anyway, welcome, Jeff. Hi, how are you today, Friday?
I am pretty good. A little tired, but but it just, you know, you deal with it. So.
Bless you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's the weekend.
Yeah, it is. And so, but since we're moving, I have my weekend is pretty well full with doing different things, going to be building some of our furniture. And so I'm going to be going and pricing out those kinds of things and figuring out what I'm going to build and when in what order and that kind of thing. So
exciting. Hopefully that'll be me soon.
I know.
Now I've got another weekend of viewings on my house. It's like, oh, how many times can I clean the house and keep the dinosaurs in the closet?
Yeah. we were at the opposite end. We went in as buyers, so we didn't have to clean anything. But
yeah, that's the nice thing. That's the best bit of it, isn't it? I'm looking forward to all of that. So yes, and I know normally for anybody who is watching, please do say hi if you're watching. Jeff and I are live today. I know normally we're live on a Monday, but we decided that we wanted to talk to you today or answer any questions today related to the fact that it is Mental Health Awareness Week. And we know just how important what we eat, how we eat, and our nutrition and our lifestyle is when it comes to our mental health. So we thought, you know, we really wanted to come and do a live today on that topic. So if you are watching, please do say hello. If you've got any questions, if you're watching the replay, again, hi, thank you for being here. I know some of you do catch up on the replay, so please do say hello as well. Let us know that you have been watching if you're not watching now. If you've got any questions related, any, as always, you know, anything nutrition related, we will more than happy answer them. It doesn't have to be related to the topic. But obviously, if you've got anything related to the topic as well, please do comment. And yeah, we would love to answer your questions whilst we are live, because that is one of the main aims, I think, of us doing these lives, is to really help, you know, kind of you with the specific things that are going on for you right now. So, Jeff, mental health. Nutrition and mental health. Now, I did post about this yesterday, because I think obviously as nutritionists, people often think that we only focus on the physical health of our clients. But yeah. No, you are very much like me in the way that you you practice. You work with the whole client, don't you? You don't just look at one aspect of their health. You look at the whole encompassing person. So for me, I coach for deep health. So mental health is a huge part of what I work on with clients. Often it's something that my clients are struggling with for various different reasons. And the two are so intrinsically linked, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. Because, you know, a lot of the issues that people have with food stem back to different mental health related issues. And it doesn't have to be some traumatic kind of experience or some major mental health condition, you know, just some of those ups and downs that all of us experience at times, where whether it be a certain level of depression, certain level of anxiety, you know, not necessarily an anxiety disorder or PTSD or a depressive disorder, but just those ups and downs that all of us have that are mental health related. A lot of those things can be impacted by how we approach the food that we eat and how we approach our, you know, how we view our body and the amount of fat that it has on it, the amount of muscle it has on it, our physical condition, you know, how we feel day to day and energy levels, all of those things that come back then again to how we eat and how we move our body and on a day to day basis.
And I think, you know, especially after the year we've had, I think this is so important. And, to discuss. And it's funny because I've just had a session with a client just before this, and we were just talking about how, you know, what he's thinking, what he's feeling, the state of his mind really has such an impact on on, because he was saying, you know, I'm feeling really, really good. You know, I'm eating well. I'm drinking lots of water. I'm exercising. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, shock horror. I'm feeling good because of that. But it's like chicken and the egg, isn't it? It's kind of what comes first, you know, because you do have to be, you know, mentally feeling, you know, mentally resilient in order to do that. Or should you be doing that to feel mentally resilient? But I think it's, you know, it's a complex, both of these areas, nutrition, mental health, they are so complex, aren't they? And so individual. And I think, again, this is why we work with the whole person in front of us and we take all those things into consideration. And I think, you know, our mental health can affect our physical health and vice versa in so many ways. So, you know, things such as appetite, digestion, you know, our sleep, you know, a massive one, you know, energy levels, our immune system, you know, even to medical conditions such as IBS, migraines, autoimmune diseases, all of that, all of those things are impacted by, of course, our physical health, and all of those things have an impact on our mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to say which one, where it starts, because for some people, the mental health issue is where it may start. And then that has kind of a trickle down effect in how they eat and their level of physical activity and those kinds of things. And for other people, it can be those with chronic health conditions may have that chronic health condition set in and then have that impact their mental health. But then once the mental health is impacted, then it can again trickle down and impact those other areas and sort of snowball. And so if you don't stop it or get a handle on one of those areas at some point, then it can just continue to build and worsen in every area. So now your mental health is struggling, your physical health is struggling, and then that, you know, that struggle in your physical health causes your mental health to suffer some more, which causes then your physical and that downward spiral. So
yeah, and it can feel really overwhelming, can't it? Because if you don't feel strong physically, it's hard to feel strong mentally and vice versa. Morning, Thomas.
Oh, it's yes. Morning, Thomas.
Thanks for joining us. We're just talking about mental health and nutrition. You commented on my post actually yesterday, Thomas, when I mentioned about mental health and how you're in good mental health, which is absolutely amazing to hear. And I think the thing also I just want to kind of point out here is that we all have mental health.
Right.
Just like we all have a diet, yeah? Just like we all have a nutrition strategy. We all have it. It's just, you know, there are obviously, you know, varying ends of the spectrum. And when it comes to mental health, I'd like to think about it as a slide, you know, because you've got kind of, you know, you've got your good mental health up here, you've got kind of poor mental health down here where maybe you're thinking about needing some intervention, and it can become quite a slippery slope, can't it, if you're not kind of catching things. And this is the thing. This is when it can feel really, really overwhelming, is when it's here, when things have just built up and accumulated over time, and then it can just feel, where do I even start? And this is so often what many of my clients come to me with. And, you know, even the client that I was speaking to today, he just felt, it's so funny because we were stripping things back and he was thinking, well, X, Y, Z worked for me in the past, but I've just lost my way and I've got overwhelmed with it all. And, you know, I've got confused. And because there is this whole, we've been had a year of being in a pandemic where there's been so much uncertainty. People haven't known what's happening from one day to the next. We found ourselves working from home. We found ourselves socially isolated. Then you've got all that. Lots of people that are probably out there Googling the best way to lose weight, et cetera, and all this kind of stuff. So you've got all this uncertainty going on outside in the world. And then internally, you've got all this uncertainty going on because you're like literally just filling your head with all of this pseudoscience that is what you'll probably find, you know, when you and not just what you'll find when you Google things. It's just infiltrated, isn't it, within our society. It's infiltrated, you know, basically we grow up with the idea, this is going a little bit on the tangent, but it is linked to mental health, because we grow up with the idea that the last thing you ever want to be is fat. Yeah, you hear it. I mean, I was listening to a podcast this morning and they were talking about children's stories and how the villain's always fat, ugly. The villain's always overweight. The villain's always gluttonous, you know? And so there's that message from a very young age that if you get fat, it's bad. And then obviously you've been in this pandemic where we're less active, and, you know, and we're comfort eating, and, you know, and kind of, you know, we're thinking, oh my God, we're going to get fat. So it's like, you know, it's become so overwhelming for so many people, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people have been kind of awakened to the fact that some of these approaches that they've been using for managing their nutrition and their health were not the best approach, you know. And in fact, I was having this conversation with one of my clients just a couple of days ago, who'd used Weight Watchers and other approaches in the past, and through the pandemic, she realized that when something comes into play that disrupts your life just a little bit, those restrictive approaches don't really work anymore. Those approaches that you know, while Weight Watchers may say, "Oh no, you get to eat what you enjoy," it really is a very restrictive approach. And there's often, whether it's intended or not, there's a focus on sticking to the points within that. And in fact, that's what she was saying. She was saying, "I was always focused on making sure I stuck to my points rather than how's my body feeling? How am I feeling as a result of the amount that I'm eating?" And she was commenting on how when the pandemic hit, that no longer really worked because there was this other disruption in place, and it threw a wrench in there. And she realized that this, in fact, was not working as she thought it had done in the past, because in the past, sticking to the points led to weight loss, got her to the size that she wanted and that kind of thing. But she realized it wasn't sustainable. And so, my point with that was that can have a significant impact on your mental health, because then you get frustrated. You think that you've done something wrong. You think that you need to, you know, get back on track and that kind of thing, rather than realize that wasn't a sustainable approach for you.
Well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. And the thing is that, you know, having a poor relationship with food, having a poor relationship with your body, it has just as many medical implications and physical implications as, you know, being overweight, being obese can have. Okay. And I think that is often so overlooked. It's, you know, it's so simplified out there in the media. It's kind of, you know, I was listening to something today, actually, that was really quite scary. It was about somebody who was really poorly in a lot of pain. And she went to her doctor, and her doctor basically said, you know, the reason you're experiencing all this pain is because you're overweight, you need to go and lose some weight. Anyway, a year down the line after, you know, and she said she was trying to lose weight, she started going to boxing classes, but she would often throw up because the pain was so bad.
Yeah.
Well, to cut a long story short, she found out a year down the line that she had stage 3 cancer. I can't remember what it was. She said, you know, and she's still angry and frustrated at that doctor right now, who literally just overlooked what was going on because of the larger body that presented itself in that doctor's surgery at that time. You know, so I think my point here is that it's so infiltrated within our society. It's so infiltrated within all of our systems, within most of our professional, you know, there's that bias that a larger body is wrong, is something that we should all not strive to, you know, we should all be striving not to achieve, not to be that. And so then we focus on how we can manipulate that, which leads to poor relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And so very often, and then this poor relationship with food does two things. Number one, it deprives you of all the vital nutrients that you need in order to think clearly, in order to regulate your thoughts, in order to regulate your feelings. If you're not getting enough carbohydrates in your diet, if you're not getting enough protein in your diet, you're not going to be thinking clearly. You're not going to be thinking straight. So automatically, your mental health is going to be affected. Then, of course, there is all the, you know, the psychological implications that come along with just dieting in itself. Like you said, the guilt, the shame, the not being able to stick to the rules and feeling like you're a failure, that slowly erodes your self-esteem. Now, I'm working with clients that get up in the morning and are crying at what they look at in the mirror, that, you know, because of what diets have done to them.
Yeah.
They're not enjoying socializing because, I mean, again, I had a client recently. She sat on the end of her bed not wanting to go out and socialize. We're coming out of a pandemic, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to go and see people because she's ashamed of the weight that she's gained. Now, if that isn't a mental health issue, then, you know, it's just, yeah, you know, because obviously, of course, it's affecting your mood. It's affecting how you're socializing. It's affecting all sorts of those. And this is, again, this is why it's so important in the work that I do, to work with the whole client, to work with, and not just, you know, say to them, why aren't you eating this? Why aren't you eating that? Why aren't you sticking to that? Yeah, okay, we look at that in a roundabout way. We kind of find, you know, why are these things not working? Usually they're not working, you know, for reasons that are psychological more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's where some of the nutrition advice that we pass along to our clients can be very beneficial for their mental health. Because when you are caught up in some of these diet rules where you're overly restricting calories, not saying that there's anything wrong with being in a modest calorie deficit, but when you're restricting your calories, thinking, okay, well, I need to eat 1200 calories a day because that's what my friend said she's eating. And, you know, when you weigh 300 pounds and you're eating 1200 calories a day, you're significantly impacting the amount of energy coming into your body and you're not giving it enough. And so it's going to have an impact on various other functions inside your body. And one of those is your brain function. And this whole low carb advice, you know, cutting out fruit that people are saying and cutting out carbs and this kind of thing. Yeah, you may get weight loss to occur, but your brain functions best with, it requires glucose and it functions best when you provide it enough. And I think any of us who have ever gone low carb for a period of time, have experienced that brain fog, at least initially, until you know, some people can adapt to it if they're following a keto diet, but we won't go into that. But in general, when somebody just starts to restrict carbohydrate, that your brain starts to get foggy. And so if you're already struggling with something going on in your brain, your mental health, some kind of emotional health or some kind of thing that you're struggling with, it's going to be impacted by that and further exacerbate those issues. And then, of course, that, again, has that snowball effect. And so that's why it's so important that we pass along some of that nutrition science also as part of that coaching process. And I know that's why I do spend time doing that. But again, that, you know, kind of listening to each person and finding out, hey, what areas may be beneficial to you to help with that. But yeah, it's important that we understand that just that you don't just eat less, move more. That's not going to make you healthier. There's so many other factors involved and they can play off each other.
Do you know the thing, you know, the healthiest place a person can be really is to be in touch with and responding to their hunger and their satiety. Yeah. When you're responding and in touch with your hunger and your satiety, your caveman brain feels safe. Okay. Now, when your caveman brain, because, and this is something I talk about with a lot of clients, you know, if we are very primitive, you know, in terms of, because basically we want to survive. And if we're not giving our food adequate nutrition, our caveman brain gets stressed, it gets anxious. You know, and this is where a lot of people, you know, this is where they struggle with anxiety and stress around eating, etc. And, you know, if you're, caveman brain is stressed and anxious, it all becomes really difficult and you know, and things, when your caveman brain then kicks in, it kind of, you know, things will start to happen physically, you know, it will start to shut down certain systems in order to reserve calories and things like that. It's why we end up feeling cold, it's why we end up feeling stroppy and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But once we are giving our bodies what they need, once we're listening to our internal satiety and hunger signals, so we're knowing when to eat and we're knowing when to stop,
right,
your brain feels safe, everything's okay, and your body will regulate itself and it will maintain, it will get. And you mentioned earlier about how, you know, this isn't about us sitting here and saying no one should ever be in a calorie deficit, because neither of us are against weight loss.
No.
But the research out there shows that actually 1 in 10 people who purposely manipulate their behaviors to lose weight, only 1 in 10 people manage to keep it off. Whereas people that are focusing on other things, where people that are focusing on their relationship with food, focusing on what their body is telling them, listen, healing themselves. You know, I like to think that the work that I do with clients, I could easily put them on another meal plan. I could easily put them on another diet. But my aim with all of my clients is to help them feel well again and just giving them another nutrition strategy that isn't appropriate for them alongside. Now, don't get me wrong, we do look at nutrition strategies, but we look at all the other stuff that's going on, why they are. It's so funny because just for example, my client today, and we were talking, it was like, well, I guess, you know, what I'm doing now is not too dissimilar to what I was doing 2.5 years ago when I lost all that weight or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it worked. And I said, yeah, but the difference now is, you know, we've worked on your mindset. We've understood, you know, what you've got to remember is what you were doing then wasn't sustainable. Okay. Right. You couldn't keep with it. Whereas now what we're working on is maybe eating in that way again, because it made you feel good. You were focusing on unprocessed foods. You were drinking lots of, you know, you were making sure you were hydrated. You were exercising. You were getting plenty of fiber, plenty of protein. But for some reason in the past, that didn't work because you weren't doing it from the same place as what you're doing it now. Now you're doing it because you know that eating 3 croissants in a row feels rubbish. Yeah. You know that certain food choices aren't going to agree with you. You know how to stop and listen. You know when enough is enough. So yes, you're eating in a way now that, you know, you did before to lose weight and you're doing it again now, but you're doing it from a very different place. You're doing it from a place where you're listening to and you're honoring your body. So yeah. It, you know, it's not about saying this is the right way to eat, this is the wrong way to eat. It's about saying, hey, just listen to your body, and you'll probably find yourself eating in a way you've tried to, and I've said this so many times before, you'll probably find yourself eating in a way that you've tried to for years and years and years but never managed it because you were doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because, you know, a lot of those behaviors are very fatiguing mentally. Wow. And if you're already struggling with stress in your life from just, you know, all of us have those normal day-to-day stresses from work, family, obligations, those kinds of things. And then on top of that, then you are adding in additional fatigue from worrying so much about the change on the scale, what it's doing, how you're eating, you know, whether you're sticking to this diet or that diet, or are constantly thinking about food and that kind of thing. That's just another layer of mental fatigue that you're putting on top of and this is just somebody who's not even struggling with any kind of a clinical mental health issue. Now, someone with a clinical health issue, that's going to be exacerbated even further. And we see this with mental health conditions, and we also see it with people who are neurodivergent. So you have people on the autism spectrum and other conditions like that, where it's further exacerbated. They're more susceptible to developing disordered eating and eating disorders. And so you can just see how when you can reduce those stresses in your life, it's much easier then to deal with the things that you need to deal with. And yeah. So many people think that they need to focus on that scale number, and that's not where the focus should be. So it's not that we're saying, hey, you shouldn't be trying to lose weight, but the issue is that it's where you're focusing your attention. I mean, for most people, focusing their attention on the scale and what it tells them is not really where they should be focusing their attention. And this is something that's really exciting to see in clients when they're able to shift from that. And they're kind of like, yeah, I really don't care what the scale told me today. I no longer really worry about that. I'm just worrying about, you know, I'm just thinking about day to day and working on those different areas to improve my overall health and well-being. And guess what? My weight happens to be dropping as a consequence of that, because like we talk a lot about how we're helping you get the body that's right for you. Mm-hmm. Well, if your body is bigger than it should be, if you're eating in the way that's appropriate for you as an individual, it will naturally move downward in that direction toward where it is the right size for you. Likewise, if it's too small, and you know, and the same kind of thing happens once you get your eating habits in place and you're listening to your body, then it will tend to move up or maintain. And, you know, and so it's about shifting that focus so that you can then save up the energy for those other things that you're trying to deal with. And you also see this with people with chronic physical health conditions. And my wife's an example of that. You know, there's so much that she has to deal with just to manage that physical, that chronic health condition, much less try and then stick to some kind of regimented workout program and regimented diet program and that kind of thing. And that can really take that energy. And those, you know, anybody who has maybe some kind of chronic health condition, you may have heard of something called spoon theory. And it's basically this idea that you only have so many spoons in the day, so much energy available. And if you use that energy in other areas, it has to come from another area. And and even people who are perfectly healthy in every regard, you know, for the most part, still have a limited amount of energy and still a limited amount of mental capacity. And when we're taking that and focusing it on these dietary rules and what the scale says and how our body looks, and we're taking it and focusing it all there, then that takes it away from those other areas.
Yeah. It's a bit like willpower as well. You know, willpower is a finite resource. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people tend to think that they can, you know, constantly rely on willpower, but that's always going to run out. And every decision, you know, we spoke about this before about decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. You know, and even all of this impacts on our mental health, you know, feeling confused and overwhelmed, all of it impacts our mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said about decision fatigue as well. And, you know, when you're constantly having to think about whether you're sticking to your rules, whether you're sticking to your, exerting enough willpower, if you've got enough willpower, every decision you make slowly depletes your willpower. This is why when you wake up in the morning, you can probably stick to those diet rules, but by the end of the day, you're finding yourself raiding the cupboards because every single decision you've made during that day, every single kind of tensious moment that you've had during that day, every time someone's annoyed you, it's kind of chipped away slowly, slowly at your willpower. So how about we stop thinking that we need to rely on willpower? And how about we just begin to trust our bodies, listen to our bodies, and break it down brick by brick?
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, people get so overwhelmed thinking, oh, you know, I don't even know where to start. I'm so deep into this now. Mm-hmm. And this is where coaching can really, really help, you know, obviously, because, yeah. You know, my clients know themselves better than anybody. I'm not the expert on my client. Mm-hmm. My client is the expert on themselves. But often they are stuck in a broken way of thinking. Because a lot of people will say to me, oh, you know, if you can fix me, Becky, no, you're not broken. You are not broken. You are just in a broken thought pattern. You know, it can be resolved. And it's really simple. Really, really simple. Mm-hmm. But not easy.
Yeah. You
know, not easy.
And that's a good point about the coaching aspect of it, because, you know, we're going to be having a guest on the podcast here next week talking about how coaching
is coming on, isn't he? Yes.
What's that?
It's next Friday, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. So talking about coaching, this is another coach like us, another nutritionist who has sought the help of a business coach. And it's very much related in the same way. He needed help with his business. And, you know, he's fine with his health. He doesn't need a health coach, but he needed a business coach to help coach him in areas where he was struggling. And that's kind of what we do for people who may not have any issues with their business, but they may have areas where they're struggling with their own health. I have a particular client who comes to mind there. She has a very solid, thriving business, but the health part was the area where we've been working. And so you know, she actually is a coach for other people to help them achieve certain particular goals, but she needed coaching in this other area. And I think that's an important role to play. I think all of us can benefit from getting coaching in those different areas, whether it's marriage coaching, you know, through a marriage counselor, whether it's mental health coaching. Or mental health coaching in a sense from a psychologist or a counselor. And often that can be really helpful to have that. And you know, as an example, you know, we have this hunger and fullness scale that we use with people. Well, I just introduced one of my clients to that this week after 6 months of working together.
Yes.
And the reason is that she did not need that at that point. Or 6 months ago, that was not an area where she struggled. Right now, it's not necessarily an area where she struggled, but it's an area where she's growing to realize she would like more awareness. And so now we brought that out, where with another client, that may be the first thing I send them. I might have them start working with that. And so again, it's this where we listen to what the person needs and help guide them in that direction. And it can be very beneficial in all these areas. You know, coming back to mental health, it can really help with that, because, you know, this particular person, it's really freed her from a lot of that, a lot of what she grew up with.
Yeah. that's, and again, that's exactly kind of, you know, the amount of clients that have, you know, said to me about how they're doing the work, you know, I'm not, I don't need to be careful what I kind of say here and how I, you know, talk about, because obviously I'm not, you know, I'm not anything I'm going to say I'm not, you know, I'm a nutrition coach fundamentally, right. But I, like I said, because I work at the whole, with the whole client in front of me, it, you know, that it really, really does impact the work that we do together, really does impact on their mental health. And the amount of clients that have said that, you know, I've had clients that have come off their, you know, medication for depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. et cetera. Clients that have come to me, and I've got one client who quite openly, she said, you know, I came to you and I literally didn't know how I was going to get through another day. You know, she was literally suicidal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now she said she's the happiest she has ever been. So, you know, the two are, but the reason she felt like that was because she was so confused. And she says, I didn't realize just how much this pressure to stay thin, this pressure to be somebody, you know, mm-hmm. how much, or this pressure to be somebody she wasn't. She didn't realize how much this was having an impact on everything. It was having an impact on her mental health, which was having an impact on the way she was eating, which was having mm-hmm. an impact on the way she was moving. And I want to talk a little bit about exercise as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I think, I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Ian next week, because, you know, when you mentioned that he was going to come on, I was like, that's brilliant, because I'm, you know, I've done exactly the same. I've had to, you know, like I say, I'm quite happy with my nutrition. I'm quite happy with the way that I, you know, I'm intuitive enough to know when things are, when I need to work on certain things, mm-hmm. etc. But with my business, I have needed coaching, and I am having coaching. And uh-huh. coaching for a while, because for the same reasons as the, what I work with my clients as well, in the way that I work with my clients, it is about unpicking all of that that's going on so that you feel less overwhelmed and stressed out. I needed a coach for business because it was impacting my mental health because I was so overwhelmed and stressed by it. So it's the same yeah. principle, isn't it, which is you know, I think it'll be really great to have that conversation.
Yeah, it really is.
Where we're based, opposite sides of the I'm in the UK, whereas Jeff, where are you, Jeff?
I am currently in the Dallas, Texas area, and in about 2 weeks we are going to be in the Houston area, so we're moving, in the process of relocating, so excited about that. But yeah, we are at opposite ends of the world.
We are at opposite ends of the world. Hi Alan.
Hi Alan.
So and on that note, I did want to move on to, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, what you were just saying then, but I think it'll be really, I think I'm really, I'm looking forward to that conversation with you next
yeah.
week.
No, yeah, me too.
And, you know, it's about breaking things down. I think one of the things that I think hopefully we will touch on in there is about how we need to break things down. We need to break things down brick by brick in order to make it stick. Yep. And I think that's where the beauty of a coach lies. You know, yeah. it's not about, a coach doesn't tell you that you've got to do X, Y, Z or else. You know, they right. work with you to find a strategy, and then they give you that, they help you with that accountability, etc. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to move on as well to talk about exercise as well, because yeah. obviously, you know, exercise can really, and movement can really have an impact on our mental health. But I don't know about you, but I think it can have an impact on your mental health at both ends of the spectrum. And I think, obviously, if you are moving and you're exercising in a way that feels fun, that is joyful, that is exciting, and, you know, then it can have such an impact, such a positive impact on our mental yeah. health. Whereas if you are exercising solely to manipulate your weight, solely to burn just another calorie, you know, yeah. kill yourself, then for me, I think that can actually have a negative impact on our health. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I think it really can. And each person's different. You know, there's a difference between somebody who's driven and dedicated to improving and reaching goals, and maybe they're training for athletic competition, and that's kind of a driving force for them. Just like somebody who works on their business or works in their art form. You know, they practice their music or whatever. But I think with anything, you can become unbalanced in how and to what extent that you take that. And I think it's especially, people are especially susceptible to that with weight loss and exercise, because I see this in fitness groups all the time where I interact. people asking which burns more calories.
Yeah.
And there's this constant fixation on number of calories. And then people are saying, oh, well, you know, if you do HIIT or then versus steady state cardio, then you're going to get the afterburn effect for 24 hours. You're going to be burning more calories. And if you build more muscle, you're going to be burning more calories. And so you should be focusing on lifting heavy weights to build more muscle so that you burn more calories. And yes, all of these recommendations are technically true. But the problem is that often, like the build more muscle example, yes, if you build more muscle, you do burn more calories. But even if you put on 10 or 15 pounds of more muscle, which is actually a significantly large amount, especially for a woman, but even for a man, to put on that much muscle is not something that comes easily.
No.
You're not going to be burning that many more calories with that additional muscle. Exactly. We're talking about, okay, you can now eat an extra banana.
Exactly.
But people hear that and then they suddenly think, oh, well, if I just put on more muscle, then that, I think in their mind, often it's like, oh, well, that's 300, 400, 500 calories difference. That's not that dramatic. And so we're applying these things, these strategies, or we're worried about the specific training style and program and all of this instead of focusing on something that would be enjoyable, that's going to really result in the same outcome from a physiological standpoint, but it's probably something that's going to work better for you because you actually like it.
Exactly. And the thing is, though, is that there are plenty of, you know, PTs, nutritionists, et cetera, out there who will kind of, you know, really over, what's the word, you know, kind of sensationalize the fact that, you know, having some more muscle means that you burn more calories, or eating certain foods like eating protein increases, you know, there's a higher thermic effect of protein and all that kind of stuff. And it's just negligible and it means nothing in the grand scheme of things. There are things you should be focusing on more. Like when people go, oh, what should I do to exercise? Should I run? Should I do weights? And I'm like, what do you feel like today? And why are you doing it? You know, if you want to go to the gym and you want to do some weights because you want to get stronger, you want to get fitter, you want to be able to pick your kids up, you want to be able to, then that's it. That's brilliant because you're exercising for something, you know, there's a reason to do that. I was talking to somebody recently and they were doing, they were doing a Peloton. They were exercising with a Peloton. Yeah. And, you know, it was really hard work. I was really getting my rate up because I was doing it because I want to get better at skiing. I'm going skiing soon. So there was a real driving motivation for her to be pushing herself, for her to be getting her heart rate up. And that's great. That's healthy. Whereas if you're literally dying in a class or dying at the gym or going and slogging out a run just because you want to burn more calories to manipulate your size, then for me, that is not psychologically going to benefit you in the long run, because you're not going to stick to it. You're not going to feel good. Mm-hmm. But this isn't me saying that you should get up every day and you should, you know, you should be jumping out of bed and you want to exercise.
Right.
No, it doesn't happen like that. I exercise most days, but there is some discipline there. There has to be some discipline.
Exactly. You
know, I find it, but I know why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it. I am doing it because it makes me feel good. I am doing it because I want to be stronger and fitter. I'm not doing it because I want to lose weight. And that means it's enjoyable. That means that if it's not suiting me at the time because I'm exhausted or I've got some muscle fatigue or I haven't eaten very well, I'm not going to push myself because I just want to burn those calories.
Yeah. And that's much better mentally on us, because whenever we're doing something that we actually look forward to, relatively speaking, and enjoy, you know, there's days where I don't feel like going to the gym, but I go ahead and go out of discipline. And we're not saying that, oh, you have to have joy and fun every time that you exercise. I mean, some exercise is not necessarily fun. It's work. But also we know that work pays off. There is a payoff for putting in hard work. And just like we have a job, our job isn't always fun and every little detail. But we go ahead and do it because overall it brings us joy and fulfillment, and we can do the same with our movement too. And so so it is important to find those things that you enjoy, but it's also it's still okay to have certain things that require a certain level of discipline, especially if you have a specific goal. Like if you're training, if you're thinking, you know what, I would love to run a marathon. That would just be so, such a cool experience. And I really want to do that. Well, there is going to be some sacrifice that you're going to have to put in to achieve that goal. And so we do have to understand that. The same with somebody who thinks, you know, I'd like to build some additional strength in my body. I want to be able to move the furniture in my house without hurting my back. It's like, okay, well, here's what we can do. We can incorporate some of these kinds of exercises to help you achieve that goal. And you may say, oh, well, I don't really like that, but you know what? The end result is something that's worth it to me. But again, coming back to when the focus is just on weight loss, then it really starts to muddy up the waters because you don't always see that weight loss, even when you're doing something that's designed for that purpose.
No, and I think it's when, you know, when an exercise can become, and again, it becomes another way of beating yourself up.
Yeah.
You know, it can become an obsession. You know, I've been at that end of that spectrum where exercise really wasn't healthy for me at all because it became an obsession. It became something I had to do if I was going to eat. You know, if I didn't exercise, I couldn't eat. And that, and this is what I mean by it can be, you know, and the other thing I'm going to say here as well is that, and that's when it can have a real negative impact on your mental health, you know. And I think the other thing I wanted, you know, that's key to point out, leading on from what you said, Jeff, is that we, you know, self-care is not about not being disciplined.
Right.
Being disciplined is part of self-care.
Exactly. Now,
I don't exercise every day because, like I said, because I feel like it. I do it because there was a certain amount of discipline there. And I know, to be fair, the main reason I exercise is because of my mental health. I know that, you know, moving, it helps to lift my mood. It helps to, you know, if I sit around a lot of the day on Zoom calls, I'm not very active during the day. So I know that I need to, you know, it makes me feel better. It gives me more energy. Mm-hmm. So that's why I do exercise. Whereas you've got some people who will literally, they'll be going to the gyms, they'll be going to the boot camp, they'll be going to runs, and they are depleted of energy. And I've been there. You know, and I know it has the exact opposite effect of what you want. I used to go to the gym first thing in the morning, kill myself, you know, and then the rest of the day I would barely move.
Yeah.
Because my body then was absolutely exhausted. I wasn't feeding it very well. So it was doing everything to reserve energy. Whereas if I had just gone and done something that felt good, that I felt more energized about afterwards rather than feeling absolutely knackered, the rest of the day I probably would have burned so many more calories because I wouldn't have been warm up like now. You know, if I was sat here, I'd have been sat here, I wouldn't have smiled because I'd be like, my whole body would just be going, you need energy, you need energy. Whereas when you do exercise that feels good, that doesn't, you know, and don't get me wrong, you know, getting your heart rate up, you know, the benefits are quite clear that, you know, getting your heart rate up, for is it 20 minutes a day or something like that is good. But that doesn't mean, you know, and that has, you know, such an impact on your mental health, on your cardiovascular health, et cetera. But that doesn't mean killing yourself, does it? To burn extra calorie that you're probably going to end up reserving later on in the day because you're exhausted.
Yeah, and that's so true. And that just ties right in nicely with the mental health aspects of it too, because when you are physically tired, it tends to be mentally tiring too. And so, you know, as another example, another client that I work with, since I'm a PT also, I put together some workouts for her. And she was asking, okay, she enjoys group classes, so she's going to a group class and was wanting to add in some resistance training and that kind of thing. And so we were talking about how that was going to impact it and what the considerations are, you know, as far as her energy levels and explaining that, you know, when you do add in additional exercise, that's going to use up some more of your energy during the day. And so we want to make sure we're adding in an appropriate amount so it's helping you as opposed to hurting you. Because exactly what you said there, when you start putting in too much exercise, in the interest of burning calories, it often has an exact opposite effect. Yes, you burn more calories with exercise, but now it saps into your non-exercise activity. And so it can be a wash, or you can actually end up burning fewer calories over the course of a day by adding in more exercise than you would had you just left that out. And it's really fascinating how the body works because it is designed to preserve itself. And so, and add in the calorie deficit where you're not giving yourself enough food to fuel that activity and your body's going to dial it back even more.
Yeah. And I think, One thing I want to say here, and you know, a lot of people probably do want to achieve that balance and can understand the merit in what we're saying. But I think it's really difficult to do that until you can accept your body.
Yeah.
We live in a society where it's so hard to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think what we need to understand, what we teach our clients, Jeff, isn't it, is that we teach our clients that your body is unconditionally acceptable. Whether you've gained a few pounds, whether you've lost a few pounds, your body is accept. You know, you are enough as you are. Okay. Right. And once you can accept that, you can begin to build on that and you can become healthier. You can, you know, you can choose exercise that feels good. You can choose a way of eating that feels good rather than constantly being guilt-tripped and shamed into it. There is so much. And like I said to you about the, you know, the case I told you earlier where this woman who, you know, the lady I spoke to you about who ended up, obviously her cancer went undiagnosed for so long. And it's because basically her GP shamed her. Her GP in the surgery shamed her because of her weight and her size. And this is what we're dealing with, you know, everywhere. And this is why so many people then internalize that as something that they are doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need people. It's okay us sitting here talking in this way. And people go, yeah, yeah, what you're saying makes sense. But we need people to understand kind of the subliminal messaging and what's going on around them so that they can begin to accept themselves and then focus on those healthier behaviors and habits that, yes, may bring weight loss. Mm-hmm. If weight loss is something that needs to happen, but fundamentally they're going to bring you happiness. It's going to bring you joy. It's going to help you to feel more relaxed. It's going to take away that severe overwhelm. Now, I'm not going to say, you know, stress, there's such a thing as positive stress. I'm not saying there isn't, you know, and we're all going to experience things in life that are going to trigger us. But when we can accept ourselves and understand ourselves, it's so much easier to navigate all of that and not let things spiral out of control.
Yeah, and I think that one point that can be made along those lines is that we should be careful how we're talking to other people also when we're understanding the impact that the words that we have can have on somebody else. And one example that comes to mind is somebody who is close to me who at one point lost 60 pounds over the course of 2 months. Well, this person was not around other people in the workplace, but had they been, those coworkers more than likely and very well-meaning would have said, oh my gosh, you look so great. You look like you've lost so much weight. And, you know, what have you been doing? Oh, well, I've been throwing up every day and I haven't been able to keep anything down. That's what I've been doing. Not on purpose, but because something was going on internally, or somebody with cancer, you know, those are the kinds of things they'll lose extreme amounts of weight. And so when as a society, we think that we're being encouraging when somebody says, hey, I lost weight, and we say, oh, good job on losing weight. Well, what if they didn't lose weight? So they did a bad job? What if they gained weight? Did they do a horrible job?
If somebody is really struggling, now the amount of time you'll see someone who's lost weight and you're like, oh, wow, you look amazing. What are you doing? You know, I wish I had your discipline. I used to get like, hold on a minute here. I'm in the grips of an eating disorder.
Yeah.
I am miserable. I am unhappy. And people are, you know, congratulating me on that. You know,
I have a meth addiction. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Well, I've said this before. Okay. Somebody who is in a larger body that decides to eat 1,000 calories a day, exercise or 800, 900 calories a day, eats only clean foods, exercises every day and starts to look, you know, we would congratulate that person on having such willpower and sticking to these behaviors.
Yeah.
You take somebody else who is slim, you know, maybe even underweight, who's engaging in those same behaviors, she's got an eating disorder. She's anorexic. Yeah. You know, so it's just think about it. Just think about, you know, it's just getting curious, isn't it? And I think what you said then there is so important, because that's one point that I really did want to make as well, is that what can we do then? You know, we've spoken already about how making sure that you are, you know, you're eating well, you're getting everything that you need, you know, you're eating regularly, you're getting enough protein, carbohydrates and fats in your diet, you're hydrated, all those kind of things. There are some foods that have been, you know, loosely associated, you know, things like iron will help you make sure you've got enough energy, of course can impact on your mental health. You know, things like fiber as well. There is actually some evidence to suggest that there's a link between getting plenty of fiber and mental health because of the whole gut brain axis, etc. So obviously there are nutrition, you know, there are nutritional things that you can do to improve your mental health. But I think also it's about perception. It's about how you perceive your weight and your size. It's about how we perceive other people. And, you know, I think what I'm going a really long way about this, but to, you know, I wanted to build on what you said. It's not okay to talk about, let's stop talking about our bodies and let's stop talking about other people's bodies. I had one client recently and she said to me, she was seeing a friend that she hadn't seen since the beginning of the pandemic. And she said, she warned this friend, she says, I warned her that I'd gained weight. Well, you know, my heart sank when she said that to me. And I'm like, so you are, you've not seen your friend for so long and all you're consumed with is the fact that she's going to judge you because you've gained some weight. And then think about the position that she's put her friend in by saying that. You know, it's just, I think, I just think we need to be moving away from talking about our bodies, moving away from talking about other people's bodies. And we think it's okay because we want to get in there first. We want to talk about our bodies first before someone else can judge us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, let's just think about that and let's just try and reframe that. And, you know, I mean, I could go on and on about this because I think there's so many things that we can do to help kind of prevent, I guess, these psychological issues occurring because of diets and size and shape and weight and stuff like that. That's probably something for another time. I mean, personally, I think we need to be thinking about the messages that we're giving to our children. Personally, that's something, and not just as a parent, as you know, as a teacher, as you know, as a medical professional, as you know, as a sports anybody who is working with children, who is speaking to children, I think they really, really need to think about the messaging that they are kind of portraying. But anyway,
and I think that's something where all of us can kind of start a good starting point is thinking about how it is that we're. What it is that we think when we see somebody who has lost weight or has gained weight, what are the thoughts that we have toward that person? Is it, hey, when they lost weight, were we excited for them? If they gained weight, did we feel bad for them? Not that we're, you know, being rude or disrespectful about it, but what are those feelings that we have inside and how can we address those and change those? Just like there's a lot of talk now about, you know, how do you think about, people from other ethnicities. There's a lot more discussion around race relations and those kinds of things. And I think we can do the same kind of thing and try and ask ourselves those hard questions. How do we feel? How do we think when we see somebody in a larger body walk by? How do we think when we see a woman who is significantly classified as, you know, obese wearing a crop top? And, you know, one of the common comments that people will say is, oh, she shouldn't be wearing that. Well, why shouldn't she be wearing that? Is she comfortable in it? Why are you bothered by seeing her stomach exposed and not somebody in a smaller body? You know, and asking yourself those questions and really exploring that. And I think that can be helpful, not only in how we treat other people and makes us more aware of how the questions we ask or the comments we make. You know, coming from a well-meaning place, like celebrating someone's weight loss or whatever, it can be helpful toward ourselves because when we gain weight, it can help us to better show compassion toward ourselves when we've worked on those thought processes that we have toward others, also, and vice versa. You know, if we're working on it, on thinking about ourselves, we should hopefully that should translate into how we're thinking about others too.
But it's a curiosity. And this is what I will say with children, you know, when people are like, how do I deal with it? When my child says that I've got a fat tummy or, you know, get curious, get curious as to where these are coming. Yesterday with Leo, we were walking home and one of Leo's friends was talking about a cat and saying the cat was really chubby and Leo got really upset and he was like, that's really unkind. Why are you saying that about the poor cat? You know, and it's like, that's really, you know, poor cute little cat and you're calling it chubby. But it was quite cute to see actually, because it's like Leo is already questioning fat shaming.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, and I was like, yeah, but on the other end of the spectrum, it's okay for children. If children see somebody and they call somebody fat, you know, they are just saying it as they see it. We shouldn't go, no, that person isn't fat. You shouldn't say that. We should again get curious. yeah. about it. Because, you know, I don't want my kids to think that fat is a bad word, you know? Yeah. It is just a description. And again, it's just something that kind of has become shameful, I think, in the society that we live in. But yeah, I think what you said then there, Jeff, exactly spot on. Be curious, question our unconscious biases and question other people and be curious, you know, because there are times because there are times when my kids will come out with stuff and I'm like, whoa, how do I deal with that? So I just get curious. What makes you think that? And you know, about when like women are always telling me that I look pregnant when I'm bloated. And it's like, what's wrong with just get curious. And rather than just and I think, and I'm gonna have to go in a minute because on that note, I have got to get Leo from school. But as well, you know, it's rather than accepting the messages, rather than accepting kind of what society is telling us we should look like or we should be like or how we should eat, get curious. Mm-hmm. Get curious about why has somebody told you that you need to be eating X amount of protein? Why has somebody told you you shouldn't be eating that? Why is somebody telling you need to get rather than just accepting it, get curious.
Yeah. And understanding how all of this really ties into mental health for ourselves and for others, because we need to understand how we talk to ourselves is going to impact our own mental health. But in many ways, even more importantly, how we talk to other people is going to impact their mental health, even if it's from a well-meaning place. Even if we're thinking, oh, I'm just encouraging them to lose weight because I know how much it helped me. That may dramatically impact that other person's mental health in a way that you are not aware of because you don't know everything that's going on with that person. And again, coming back to the coaching aspect, us having that understanding of these various disordered eating disorders, even though we don't work with those directly, understanding them, we know how to navigate some of those issues in such a way to try and avoid having any negative consequences on the person when they're putting together kind of a plan of action for themselves. And so, so I think, again, just tying it all back into that mental health part, it's really important that we understand that our words have incredible power and our actions have incredible power over people's mental health, not just not just their feelings.
Yeah. And the feet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you mentioned there about, obviously we don't work specifically with eating disorders. No, but I would say that the majority of the clients that I work with have some kind of disordered eating pattern, which is quite closely correlated with their mental health.
Yeah. And the wrong advice from somebody well-meaning saying, hey, do this diet, do that diet, could push them from mildly disordered eating to moderately to severely to full-blown eating disorder.
Yeah, exactly. I could write a book on that. One day I will. Anyway, on that note, I do have to go because I've got to get Leo. But thank you so much. If anybody is, there's not been any questions really, not really too many comments. But if anybody is watching the replay and has got any questions or comments or would just like to say hello, as usual, Jeff and I obviously go off on a tangent with stuff, but I do hope it's been useful for anybody who is watching right now or who has watched the replay. And on that note, I am going to go and hopefully catch up. Well, we'll see you all here next Friday for definite. How did we agree with Ian? I think we said about midday, didn't we? Somewhere around midday. Yeah. So that would be really, really great. Touching on exactly what you said, what Jeff mentioned there about coaching. So that will be a really great discussion. So I hope to see you then. But in the meantime, have a wonderful weekend and we'll catch you soon.